His glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram, good morning and welcome to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is the 13th of February 2014 and the time in Prashanthi Nilayam right now is 9:40 a.m. Current temperature outside our Prashanthi Digital Studios is 25 degrees Celsius with clear skies and clean crisp air. We have overnight lows in early 20s and daytime highs hovering around 32 to 33 degree range, in Celsius of course, because we follow metric in India. Offering myself at Baba's lotus feet, this is Karuna from Team Radio Sai welcoming you to Thursday Live. Dear listeners, at the outset, I'd like to confide in you about my aspirations to become a better RJ and make my Lord Sai happier with my efforts. So, from today, I'm going to attempt to operate the audio console myself in a gradual manner under the guidance of my able colleague, Brother Ganesh. And as I'm new to audio engineering, I also am at the same time quite confident that if Swami has given me this rare chance to be an RJ on His divine radio station, He will also give me the skill set to learn the art and craft of audio engineering one step at a time. And it goes without saying that I will be falling back on all my colleagues to help me to achieve this goal. Now, since I'm going to begin my learning from this moment onwards, I beg your indulgence, dear listeners, for any goof-ups that may happen during my early days in this uncharted territory. So if suddenly I announce a program and all you hear is some instrumental music, please forgive me. I'll do my very best to get the right file to play at the right moment, and eventually, with Swami's grace and blessings, I know I'll get there. With that very important disclaimer for any possible tardiness, here's what's making news in Prashanthi Nilayam these days. A batch of recently recruited IAS officers, that is members of the prestigious Indian Administrative Service of the Government of India, were here earlier this week in Prashanthi at the behest of the Government of India to observe and learn how the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust is contributing effectively to social uplift and well-being through its various humanitarian projects. A group of young officers came and stayed here overnight to study for themselves how this charitable trust is effectively transforming lives of millions and millions of Indians with its clean water projects, free health care, free education and other humanitarian programs. They visited our super speciality hospital, the Sai University, the Chaitanya Jyoti Museum, apart from attending a number of presentations by the likes of Professor G. Venkatraman. They also attended the Mandir program, that of course goes without saying. It's sort of sweet and ironic at once that the world is waking up to Baba's love and compassion only after the Mahasamadhi. For the Government of India to send its future administrators on a study trip to Prashanthi Nilayam speaks volumes about the recognition of Bhagwan's silent work. He gave his entire life to bring relief to suffering millions. Imagine an avatar had to do what governments are supposed to do. Only our beloved Sai was able to do just one thing all his life, that is, giving, giving and only giving selflessly of himself, his time, his energy, his life. Makes us wonder if we are doing enough to honor his legacy. On a different note, I must share with you a piece of news that happened a few weeks ago, and I forgot to report it on Morning Glory when it happened. One fine Sunday morning, Prashanthi Nilayam was visited by a huge group of professional bikers. It so happens that we have Harley-Davidson clubs in major Indian cities who go on long rides together as a group on weekend mornings. And one Sunday morning, a Harley-Davidson bikers group from a nearby city, possibly Bangalore, decided to drive up to Prashanthi Nilayam on their Harleys, wearing their biker paraphernalia, those cool helmets, jackets, etc. Although I'm not sure about the clip-on ponytails. And given the wonderful road that we now have all the way from Bangalore Airport till Prashanthi, they had an easy drive. And you should have seen the excitement in this town when they parked rows and rows of those famous motorcycles in town near Super Bazaar and went off to the mandir for bhajan and darshan. The local population was so excited to see so many Harleys at once. Most of them were seeing a Harley for the first time in their lives. So from Harley-Davidson bikers riding to Prashanthi Nilayam, to private jets and the presidential jet, that is our Air Force One, landing at Prashanthi Nilayam Airport, to the common poor person coming for treatment to our hospitals here in Prashanthi, Baba's love embraces all. Many observe that the draw of Prashanthi is only growing with each passing day. Statistically also, this observation is true as a large percentage of seekers coming to Prashanthi Nilayam are first-timers. And this trend is growing since the Mahasamadhi. Now come to think of it, why wouldn't it? Isn't this the place where we celebrate the glory of Lord Sri Satisai every single day? Where we hold truth, love, peace, right conduct and non-violence paramount? Today, Prashanthi Nilayam is undisputedly the seat of all things true, auspicious and beautiful. By the way, dear listeners, we will post some pictures of the Harley-Davidson parked in Prashanthi Nilayam, Puttaparthi rather, on our Facebook page along with this episode of Thursday Live. Don't forget to check it out later on tonight or tomorrow morning. Actually, so much happens here all the time that it's hard to keep pace. That is why we offer daily live studio streaming of the Monday program every morning and evening on radiosai.org on our Asia stream. And we offer live webcast of all special Mandir programs like the wonderful presentations by the Vidya Vahini schools earlier this week. All you have to do is to log on to radiosai.org and select Asia stream. Bhagwan Baba has set such efficient systems in place here that no one notices how Prashanthi Nilayam and its various allied institutions continue to function as smoothly as ever. Our children are receiving world-class education from grade 1 up to university level at no cost to their parents. Bhagwan Baba takes care of all their tuition fee and will continue to do so forever and ever. He has, in his farsightedness, ensured that Sai education, Sai healthcare will always be of world-class standards and will always be offered free of cost. The poorest of patients from all over India and often from neighboring countries like Pakistan and Bangladesh are receiving professional medical care in Baba's hospitals, and our various water projects are continuing to deliver clean water to millions. Our mobile hospital continues to thrive and grow, taking health care to the doorstep of poor villagers in far-flung areas. If I may take a line from a Mughal emperor who saw the beautiful valley of Kashmir and declared, "If there is heaven on earth, it is this, it is this, it is this." So smitten was he by the picturesque scenery all around him. Well, the valley of Kashmir is still beautiful to behold, no doubt, but that's where its heavenliness stops these days, given the political unrest there. Instead, if I may be audacious enough to say, if there is a vibrant heaven on the face of this planet Earth, where higher purpose, purity and selfless love are the freely traded currencies, it is certainly right here in our Prashanthi Nilayam, the slice of heaven on earth created by the incarnation of pure and supreme love, Bhagwan Sri Satisai Baba. And you, dear listeners, are connected to this heaven on earth through this live broadcast called Thursday Live, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam in real time, which right now is 10:49 a.m. on February the 13th, 2014. Oh, I'm sorry, I beg your pardon, I didn't see the clock properly. It's 9:49, Ganesh pointed out, not 10:49. I just got ahead by 60 minutes. It's 9:49 a.m. on February the 13th, 2014. With that wrap-up, it's time to lay out the menu we are serving today on Morning Glory. We will continue the lineup of two outstanding interviews that we started last week. One, a Tryst with Divinity conversation with an international group of Christmas celebrators, and the others, a Fleeting Moments interview with an alumnus of Baba's University. Both the interviews are conducted by my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti. Firstly, under our Tryst with Divinity series, which incidentally will now onwards be a staple on Morning Glory, I will bring you the second and final part of a conversation with four devotees who were reliving their joy of being in Prashanthi Nilayam for Christmas 2013. Urvashi and Shesha, two sisters from South Africa, along with Arvind Chauhan from Australia and Kiritaran Subramaniam from Malaysia, will share their concluding reflections. This will be followed by part two of a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Under the spotlight today is Yesab Giri of Darjeeling. Brother Yesab Giri is an alumnus of Bhagwan Baba's University. So, let's take off Morning Glory with the Tryst with Divinity interview with four individuals from three different countries and continents who all landed in Prashanthi to celebrate Christmas 2013. Please enjoy. You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Sri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970, when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and, of course, tiny little rosebuds, which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger. Mm-hmm. And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love all, serve all. We've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock because we put it on millions and millions of t-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, love all, serve all. We put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Tryst with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Tuesday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Tryst with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the scheduled page on our website, radiosai.org. Or you can download and listen to any interview of your choice in the Tryst with Divinity series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/tryst. That is radiosai.org/tryst or tryst. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Now, I want to go back to what Sister Urushi was saying. You know, in your visit in 2010, you mentioned that you had to go back to the country because of visa problem. And Shesha continued her journey to Parthi. So, Shesha, how was it for you? Because you were left alone at that time in Parthi.
Well, brother, let me just backtrack a little. So, having been born into a family with a Sai following, both my parents were, and my dad, who was ardently following Swami, and thereafter my mom, having gone through Bhavikas and the teachings of Swami, having that etched into our hearts, growing up is not always easy and you tend to follow different paths. So Swami allows you because you need to learn and, you know, he'll call you back into his fold when the time is right. So what had happened was when Vashi had come in September for the Ubuntu production, when she got back, my dad, who having been a follower of Sai for about 45 years, he had never come to Prashanthi.
Oh.
He never. Vashi had been multiple times by then, but he had never come to Prashanthi. And when she had got back in September, she said to my dad, "You are going to Prashanthi for Christmas this December. There's no two ways about it. And you know, you and mom have to go. So my mom had been before, but not my dad. And with me, I was very, you know, there wasn't a sense of urgency that I needed to come. And there was two things. Firstly, my sole reason for coming to India would have not been to come to Prashanthi Nilayam. It would have been a holiday for me. And I decided that, okay, if we're going to be spending Christmas in the ashram, that's fine. But I will be touring India because that was my main purpose. And the second thing was, I mentioned that I will not come to the ashram, to Prashanthi, if Vashi's not with me. So that was the two main things that, you know, and from then we planned and all tickets were booked. My parents and my brother had decided to come, I think it was end of November. And Vashi and I said to her, she never takes a holiday if she's coming. She actually, this is her holiday. So I said to her, I'm coming with you this time, so we will have a little holiday in Dubai before we get here. And she obviously had to agree with me, being the younger one. So being a younger sister traveling with an older sister, they usually tend to see to everything. That includes having all the money and passports and all of that. So, you know, I was very free coming here. It was just my hand luggage, and she dealt with taxi cabs and traveling arrangements and all of it. So we had had a nice holiday in Dubai at a water theme park there. And when we get to Bangalore, as she mentioned, in the morning, we're both exhausted. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and she has all of our passports and all of that, and we get to the passport control, and they immediately separated her. I had no idea what was going on. And they immediately told her that she's going to be deported because her visa's not correct, and I was like, there's no way I'm going on without you. I'm going back home too. It's Bangalore at 3 o'clock in the morning. I've never been to India before. You can imagine the type of experience it would have been. So at that point, she insisted. She says, no, you need to go. Mommy and Daddy are already at the ashram. You just have to get contact with them. How do you get contact when you have no money? You have no idea what their number is. You don't have any clue who your taxi driver is. He doesn't know what you look like. How do you find your way from Bangalore airport to a place that's 2.5 hours away? Well, Swami knew. And they immediately separated her. I was left at the airport completely distraught, not knowing what to do. And in all of this mayhem, I had to remember that while we were leaving, one of our friends had come to the airport and had given me a little envelope for a donation. She says, just put it at the ashram. And I mean, all of those cab drivers, you know, you get this rush, then trying to say they know where to take you, but I mean, I'm not going to be comfortable going with anyone. And then I realized, okay, I've got this money, so I can quickly make a call to my sister's fiancé at the time. So I did, and he said he was going to give me my dad's number, the guy who owned the telephone, he said he was going to go and find the cab driver for me, my cab driver. I knew his name was Raj, but that's about it. So while I'm on the phone and getting the number, he brings a cab driver, and he immediately sees me, and he says, oh, Vishi. So I thought, okay, so he knows Vashi's name. And then I thought, okay, so this is the right guy that I need to go with. Immediately I knew that I'm going to be on a flight back home the next day. I knew that she refused to let me get back with her, but I knew that there was no way that I was staying, and I will get a flight back home the next day. So as we're walking towards the cab, I'm completely distraught, having gone through all of that. And I realized that I had spoken to Raj previously because he had called Vashi's phone to confirm, and when I answered, he sounded British. As we were walking towards the car, it suddenly clicked in my head, this guy doesn't sound British. And I immediately, he had my bags, and I immediately just kind of backed away, and I said, do you not Raj? And he says, I'm not Raj, but Raj sent me. And I'm just like, oh, it was just... I can't even tell you. Swami was playing a huge trick on me, or the prankster that he can be. And then he immediately phoned my mom, and once I spoke to her, I was calm. So we traveling, and I didn't realize it was such a long, you know, trip here. So I had managed to fall asleep in all of this. I fell asleep, and then suddenly the car stops. And I look around, it's completely dark, and they ask me to get out the car. And I just thought, I have no idea what's happening. I'm probably, you know, I was afraid, so afraid, you have no idea. And we had to switch cars suddenly. And I just thought, this is not normal. If she had arranged a cab driver to take me straight there, why am I suddenly switching cabs and all of this? But anyway, with all of this, I get into the other cab thinking, I don't even know the direction I'm supposed to be going in. At that point, not praying to anybody or any Swami, no, nothing is in my mind besides fear and the fact that I'm probably never going to see anybody again. So we eventually get to Prashanthi, and when I see Swami's picture, I think the minute you enter this Prashanthi, there's just, you know, Swami all over, and I thought, okay, I'm going to see my parents shortly. So we get into the ashram gates and we get to them, and coming from a westernized home, walking into a Prashanthi Nilayam apartment, it's not the most inviting when you are, firstly, have a negative connotation about even being here, and then to experience the bathrooms, and that I was in complete distress. And I immediately said to my mom, I'm not leaving this room until I'm going back to the airport. So she says, you know, you just need to have a shower, everything's going to be fine, and it's fine, if you want to go back home, you can the next day. So I agreed, and I, you know, fell asleep, and my brothers had woke me up and said, listen, you can go home tomorrow, but why don't you come with me to international choir practice, just one session, just mm-hmm. come and see what it's about, and he'll take me for a little tour. And I was like, refusing, and he says, I'm not asking you to stay, I'm just asking you to come with me today. So I agreed. So I go along with him, and we had to sit in separate places, of course, and I walk into this
double-decker building.
Yeah. I walk into the room, and it was pretty full, and I look around and I see that there's the most beautiful people sitting in this room. They're not disabled, there's absolutely nothing wrong with them, they were filled with just complete happiness. And the first thought was, what is it that they know that I don't and I'm not feeling, even having known Swami all my life? How am I not feeling this? And I sat there in that room. And I think listening to the songs being sung in different languages, and it was such an amazing experience. And suddenly, I'm sitting next to, I think it was a girl from Malaysia as well. She was from Malaysia. And there was an Australian next to me as well. And I just greeted them, but I sat down. And suddenly, I just feel like I'm being paralyzed. That's the first thought that came to my head, because my hands just, it was like electric. And as the singing is continuing, and I'm like, what is happening to me? Because I couldn't move my hands. And at that point, I thought, I'm definitely being paralyzed. I had no idea that it was actually energy that was Swami. I now know that, you know, he was literally probably transforming and removing all this negativity that I have, that I was currently faced with. He was probably, you know, just refilling this tank with just love. And I completely broke down in that choir room. And so it had completed after about 2 hours. I left completely elated, but I didn't say that to anybody. But I just knew that I need to stay. I needed to stay. So having walked out, and my brother Dushan says to me, so how was it? I said, you know what, I have no idea what happened, but there's something that happened to me. I don't know what it is. And I said, I felt like I was being paralyzed. And he's like, okay, but are you right now? I said, I'm fine. And he says, okay, when we get back to the room, we'll call Vashi and see if she's sorted out your flight. And I said, no, I'm not going home.
Wow.
So he looks at me, and
you had not even seen Swami.
I had not even seen Swami at this time. I had no intention of going to even a darshan. I just knew that I was going to go home.
Just being in the choir, a rehearsal session of the choir.
It was a rehearsal.
Oh my God.
I had not even seen Swami at this time.
Amazing. I mean, I think that is the feeling that you get from everyone. The love that you see in Prashanthi, I think perhaps you experience love in its purest form. I don't know.
You know, I can't even explain to you the feeling that I had sitting there. But it was something that, you know, it's indescribable, really.
Yes.
It really is. So continuing that, so when we got back to the room, it suddenly seemed like a 5-star apartment. And, you know, I was feeling a lot more comfortable, and I decided, okay, I'm going for my darshan. And so my parents were a part, I think in 2010, South Africa played a big role in the decor,
okay,
which my parents were a part of. So I was alone. I had no sister. And Dushyant, well, he was with, you know, also with the choir and decor team. So I was attending everything by myself. That was my first darshan, which was on the 15th. That was the evening darshan, 15th of December. So I sit there, I go in, and I'm sitting in there thinking, am I going to feel what I felt in this international choir? What am I going to feel? I had so many expectations, but was it going to, you know, really be true? And I was sitting next to, I think it was an Iranian girl, because she was fully clad in hijab. And all of these experiences, I know it was for me saying, you should be so lucky that you've known me from the time you were born. I think it was his message to me, because the thing that really struck out, the first thought was, there's a people from all over the world that are gathering in his abode. And here I am, who knew him but chose to ignore it, you know. So.
Well, but he was perhaps preparing you and waiting for the right time. And he created so many circumstances to make it really very, very special for you.
Yes.
Make it an experience which is definitely going to be life-altering for you. Perhaps that is the only way to. Because when we live with Swami, you know, there is no anecdote or chapter of our lives which are not designed by the Divine. And once we have come into His fold, He's taken charge of our lives.
Yes.
And after that, you know, He's working overtime to ensure that we experience that love that He wants us to experience. And I always used to feel that way, you know, every time, even in the years 2010, 2011, you know, whenever I used to see Swami, and though when physically Swami was not as He was 20 years before, you know, every time He came for darshan, that is the only feeling that used to come, you know. He's just doing it because of His immense love, you know, in spite of His body not cooperating with Him, but He was just doing because...
For us.
Yeah, that's what He said, you know. He just wanted to give Himself completely so that we can experience that bliss that He wants us to experience. You know, it's like God who took the cosmic Lord. First of all, it was a big sacrifice for Him to confine Himself to a flesh and bone structure and then undergo everything just so that, you know, He can communicate to us that, hello, you know what? Yeah, I am here and this is a path to joy. This is a path for you. I want you to be happy just like I am, and, you know, do this and, you know, be happy.
Wonderful. Swami's love is so pure. Everybody experiences it in their own way. And the thing is, let me put in the electrical terminology, it's like the current flowing to the wire, you don't see it.
Yes.
Right? But when you touch it, you feel
yes.
it. But you still can't explain. They just say, I've got a shock.
Yes.
But they say, what was the feeling? Swami's love is such
yes.
that He gives you
yes.
that love that
yes.
somebody says, yes, but can you describe? He said, I can't feel it. No, I can't
describe it.
That's right. So, I mean, in good terms, I'm saying, I'm not
yeah,
saying that He's giving you shocks to them. Swami's love is so pure, and I know everybody who ever comes here, or even they don't come here, it doesn't mean that only if they come to Prashanti, then they'll get Swami's love. I've met people in my life, they say, who have never seen Swami, but they've believed. And I know years back, I used to do a lot of readings, and in one of the books I read, Swami said, those who haven't seen me and believed in me are blessed twice.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's very true.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Because ultimately, He's as close to you as you think He is.
Yes.
Because ultimately He is inside.
Yeah.
S-A-I, you know, Sai, see all this inside. So let's move on to Brother Kiri. It must have been a very recharging experience for you because you had the chance to really talk to so many people. At least 14, 15 people you have spoken to and collected their stories. So how was this experience?
Well, Brother Sairam, to all the listeners, you know, I spoke to a vast spectrum of people. Many of them who couldn't even express themselves the way they want to, many of them couldn't speak English, and I had to pick and choose. That's why you see 14, 15 numbers. There are actually a few more numbers I have, and I told them, look, maybe next Christmas we will speak. I probably won't have the chance to speak because I have to submit these reports. But this Christmas was an amazing thing that Swami has done to me, which started probably in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
When I first came to Swami, you know, I listened to Sai Radio, and I used to hear Prof. Venkatraman talking, and I was really enthralled listening to him. And the first trip, I walked, and I just came to Sai Radio, and there was somebody, a guard there, and I said, "Is Prof. Venkatraman around?" And he asked me, "Do you have an appointment?" I said, "No, I just want to see him." And Prof. Venkatraman walks out, and he says, "Yes, brother, where are you from?" And I said, "Brother, I'm from Malaysia, and I'm really pleased with the work that you're doing, and I wish one day that, you know, I can do something in Sai Radio." And he tells me, "What, you know what you could do? You can go back and record Chinese bhajans for me." And when I went back and I spoke to some Chinese, and, you know, I said, "Look, I bought a recorder," and I said, "Look, can you sing Chinese bhajans?" And they all shied away, because the Chinese, you know, they feel that they are not up to the quality of where the Indians sing bhajan. When they always compare themselves, and bhajan's supposed to be in Sanskrit or Hindi or something like that. So I said, "Okay, Swami, what should I do now?" And I said, "Okay," I told myself, "Swami, the only way I can serve is to do seva." With that one request to do some recording to Prof. Venkatraman, and you see where I am now. And talking to all these beautiful people, you know, I spoke to this huge group of people, and everybody expressed love. They could not speak it in English, but the way they showed to me, there were some actually just put their hands out, "Brother," and they just said, and I knew when they put their hands up like that, it's like Swami showing his hands up and showing love to them. And this was from every single person I met, children, adults, whichever level society. And it was not me who chose them, I can tell you. It's quite obvious. It's Swami who chose them. And all I had to do is just walk. I actually, you know, I made my own plans whom I wanted to interview. I had in my mind, okay, this is the kind of person I look for. This is the type of stories I'm going to put in this thing. Because I have no idea. When I was given this job, I had no idea what I was supposed to do. And I just walked on to someone. He was working on the lights. Brother here was working on the lights in Western Canteen. The sisters, two sisters, I think you're walking near Ganesha Gate somewhere there. And I just stopped and I said, "Sister, would you like to be, you know, I'm trying to get some things for Radio Sai and I got to do this." So it just happened like that. Yes. Swami chose the people and I'm just an instrument. We just have to go with the flow. We're just insignificant, you know.
Yes. We just have to add that you managed to catch us just before we got into our taxi this morning.
Today.
The fact that we are doing the conversation now is itself another one of the instances where Swami is constantly pulling the strings.
We had our taxi packed. Our cab was packed, and we are actually waiting outside Radio Sai for us now. Brother Kiri got us just in time.
In fact, that's what Brother Kiri, when he met me, I said, "Okay, we could probably do some recording tomorrow," and then suddenly he tells, "No, I just met the sisters. Shesha is here. Can we do now?"
It's Swami. Yes. Once again, it's Swami.
Absolutely.
He said, "Why leave it for tomorrow?"
Absolutely. So finally, I think your taxi is waiting, and probably your lunch also is waiting. I don't know. But finally, can I ask each one of you to share what is that one moment in this Christmas that you really want to relive again and again? I know there are so many things that happened, right from 24th evening when you had the adult choir to 25th morning when you had the boys, students from the university singing, and you had the evening, the play, and then you had the children's choir yesterday, and today you had the sadhana come. There's so many things, and apart from this, I think there are so many other beautiful things that you would have encountered just maybe in the canteen, maybe in your room, maybe talking to so many people. But if there is only one memory from this Christmas that you really want to cherish, what would that be?
I think for me it is the darshan of the 24th of December, the morning darshan of the 24th. Sai Kulawant Hall was filled with Jesus and Buddha and Lord Shiva and Swami. They were all present in their form. The feeling in that hall was completely, it was absolute bliss. And I know that every single person that attended that darshan felt it. And this is something that I have, you know, just asked Swami to keep with me. I need to be able to take with all of this blessing and this energy back home and spread it to everybody back home and everybody that needs it, and just radiate and, you know, a part of why we are Swami's messengers is to radiate His love. It's not, you know, it's sharing experiences, but it's not trying to convert people.
Yes.
They need to look at you like the way that I looked at those international choir singers.
Yes.
Thinking, what is it that they know that I don't? Why do they look in the state of complete bliss? And it's just radiating that. And that energy from the hall on the 24th morning darshan is something that I really would like to take with me.
You just want others to be as happy as you are.
Yes.
That's all. Yes, Urvashi sister.
Sairam, I'm going to talk to you about two things because I echo Sesha's sentiment about the morning of the 24th. There was something so electrifying about that darshan in particular. We've got an aunt that we've brought with us that's not a Sai devotee.
Mm-hmm.
She just came along with us because she wanted to come on holiday with her nieces.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually mentioned that when the Shiva Bhajan was sung that morning, it touched her in such a way that she broke down. So that was really, really, really powerful that morning. The other thing for me that I will take back, and it's also why I actually keep on coming back, is Swami's planted this tree we know of, the meditation tree. And when planning my trip here, I said I want to spend as much time as possible at this tree, and I managed to spend almost every morning there this trip. That's basically what He's left now for His devotees. That's what I believe. That is our way to enlightenment. It's our way to liberation, because meditation and stilling our minds and making sure that we're actually focused on what we need to be focused on is ultimately what we need to do. So for me, the meditation tree, if I could just spend as much time as possible there.
How was it for you just sitting there?
So, a couple of months ago, I started getting deeper into meditation. Prior to this, it was just, you know, dabbling a little bit, and then you have many thoughts, and then you just stop. But Swami's message to me now is to meditate. So I read Dhyana Vahini a couple of months ago, and I started putting into practice whatever Swami tells us to do in that book. And it's amazing how easily this comes to you once you really focus on it.
Open yourself up to it.
Yes. And the meditation tree just enhances that experience even more. So, for me, the meditation tree is my favorite.
That's so fantastic, because meditation tree is something which has fascinated me too so many times, though I've never really gone in the recent past to go and sit there, because we do know that Swami has materialized that yantra.
Yes, yes.
And Swami had planted it there, and Swami had told, I think that happened sometime in late 50s, 1958 or 59, and Swami had told that what I have placed below this tree has that power. It is going to pull many enlightened souls to this place.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much power that Swami has invested.
It's also the noisiest place in Puttaparthi. If you go and sit there in the morning,
mm-hmm.
it's not silent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not still. It is very, very, very difficult to sit there and to just slip into a meditation, because there are bats in the tree
mm-hmm.
that are screeching early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, to me, that is Swami saying the world is noisy. He said it before, the world is noisy, you need to find the stillness within that.
Wow. Phenomenal. And Brother Kiri?
This has been one amazing journey for me. And if there is one message which I want to take back, is, you know, Swami's love is so immense that people who keep coming back, repeating, especially without His physical presence, are the grain that has been separated from the chaff, you know. And people are so pure now, you know, and you see this everywhere. Although they speak different languages and they have different traditions, different cultures, but that love just transcends everybody and everything. And it is the pure people that are coming more and more. I'm not saying they are not pure anywhere else, but the more and more pure attracted to the center of energy, which is Prashanti, at least for me right now, and people will keep coming. And I think this will grow. Previously, people used to come, you know, to be in the presence of Swami, to say, I've been to Prashanti, taking photographs in places around here, or taking photographs of Swami. I think that was on an ego trip.
But now it is just going inwards, and people more and more are going inwards, and they feel that source of that energy is here in Prashanti. That's my take back message, Brother Sairam.
Wow. Phenomenal. And Brother Arvind, yes.
Well, 2001, Swami proved me two things. One was that his dreams are true. Swami reads your letters, even if you put in the altar at your place. He answered me. 2013, Swami has shown his omnipresence when I visited Ishwarma Samadhi. And that's the biggest thing I'm going to take and tell everyone. Swami is there. He's there, he's there, he's there, and he'll always be there.
Wow.
With the finishing words, let me thank Sai Organization Australia to have that belief in me, to give me this opportunity to come and help them and to save Swami. And I've got two brothers in New Zealand. Now I found a third brother, Kiri. Swami is here, me a third brother. Sairam to all your
sisters. All the time growing. Yeah. And many times you feel so connected and so beautiful and so comfortable and so joyous when you are in the Sai family. Mm. And that is what is Christmas all about. You know, Bhagwan in his discourses many times used to say, you know, I'm with you, around you, below you, above you, you know, but at that time we all the time wanted, we said, okay, that's fine, but you know, we still wanted to just stand next to Swami and take a picture. But now, as both the sisters said, you know, Swami is just beside you, he's all the time with you, and I think the more and more you feel that, more you experience it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity.
It is wonderful for all of you to come, and both the sisters, as they're saying, they're about to leave Prashanti, but I don't know how to express your gratitude to Swami for having made this possible, that we could really sit and relive this experience of being in Prashanti for Christmas and share this joy, because ultimately this joy of Prashanti is something which has to be shared, because this Shanti becomes Prashanti, as Swami said, only when you share it. You know, this peace and this joy becomes Prashanti only when you take it along with you and share it. And I think to some extent, in whatever capacity we can, we have tried to do. Thank you so much for participating in this.
Sairam.
Thank you.
Sairam.
Sairam.
Tune in to Sai. Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India. The time in the ashram right now is 10:22 a.m. and today is the 13th of February 2014. I hope you enjoyed the concluding part of this two-part jolly interview with sisters Urvashi and Sesha from South Africa and brothers Arvind Chauhan of Australia and brother Kiritaran Subramaniam from Malaysia. Didn't they sound like a bunch of happy siblings, all five pure and inspired children of Mother Sai, sharing their Christmas joy with Radio Sai's very own Bishop Rushdi? I hope you agree. Do send us your feedback via email. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Dear listeners, it is now my great honor to bring you a poem, A Letter from a Parent. It is taken from the book Premadhara, a series of letters from Bhagwan Baba to his students. And these inspired words were also penned down by Joel Riordan, a Hollywood film producer, director and writer, in Miss Diana Baskin's book, My Divine Memories of Sri Satyasai Baba, page 112 to 113. And for all you know, this could well be Swami's letter to you this morning. So please take a moment to open your hearts and receive this message as his blessing. It goes like this. Dear loved ones, you ask me, how will you know when I am near you? When, on a sultry night, everything is hot and still, the first cool breeze brushes your cheek, I am caressing you, think of me. When the pangs of hunger are satisfied and loneliness is pierced by happiness, think of me. When your mouth is parched and you can hardly speak, with the first sip of cool water, I'm soothing you. Think of me. When the cloud of death disappears, first on the opening of a baby's smiling eyes, think of me. When I sprinkle your face with rain and wash the earth, the dry brown leaves, with the first smell of clean rain, I'm cleansing you. Think of me. When pain dissolves and fear disappears, think of me. When steadfast eyes are horrified by the cruelties of life, with the first glances of the silent setting sun, I am comforting you. Think of me. Then you ask, how will you know when you are near me? When the burning sun has scorched you and the earth, the sand and dust fill your eyes, not a sliver of shade about, and you love me. When loneliness is accompanied by hunger, and not one can be satisfied, and you love me. When your lips are cracked, and your tongue feels like clay, your throat seals up, there is no water about, not even a mirage in sight, and you love me. When you stir the ocean to a crescent, you flounder in its depths like a leaf, and you love me. When I take from you your most cherished possessions, on the first loss of your sight, darkness envelops you, and you love me. For everything you see, hear, smell, taste, or touch belongs to me. So how can you give me what I already am but your love? And that I gave to you before time began, as your sole possession. When you return it to me, then will I know you are truly mine, and I will dissolve your sorrow and happiness into you. That being me, I will place you in bliss forever, for I love and think of you constantly, from your most loving Father. Unquote. Wow, what powerful and soul-stirring words. And would you believe it, dear sisters and brothers, right now, I'm sitting next to the very talented Brother Ganesh, who's teaching me audio engineering. And as luck would have it, Brother Ganesh is also the lead dancer of the Prashanti dance group. And what's even more wonderful is that Ganesh actually got to dance in the divine presence of Bhagwan Baba to this poem that I just read to you. So let's chat up with Ganesh to hear what it was like to perform to such powerful words before Swami. Sairam Ganesh, and welcome to Morning Glory, brother.
Thank you, Didi. Thank you for this surprise this morning.
Yes, it just came up in the last few minutes. Now, I understand, Ganesh, you were blessed to choreograph a dance to these soul-stirring words and have performed it in front of Swami.
Yes, yes, Didi. It was in the year 2004, during the gratitude program which the final year students offered to Swami. Mm-hmm. It was on this day that I performed this particular piece.
And how did you think of doing it? How did the idea come about?
When a group meeting in our class was going on, our friends just pointed out that it was long time since you danced before Swami. Why don't you try out something new? And as all of you would know, Brother Prem, he was the one who picked up this poem for me. And
Radio Size Prem?
Yes, Radio Size Prem. And he suggested me to dance for this particular poem.
Now, how do you transform a poem into a choreograph it into first make a song out of it and then do the steps? How did you go about? What was the background score like?
You believe it or not, that was the first time I was choreographing for a thematic.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a description. Previously, we used to do only for songs.
Right.
And it was almost after a gap of around 6 years that I was dancing in front of Swami. And this was a very beautiful experience. And it was quite difficult for me to understand the essence of the poem.
It's so deep, you can do a PhD thesis on this poem.
Yes. You have to understand the entire essence. And then when you stand in front of Swami, the feel is totally different.
I can imagine. You must feel so alive.
Yes, yes. You can feel the parched throat and he wetting it by the first drop of water which you sip. And that was, and Swami was enjoying each and every bit of it. And to tell you the story behind this.
Please.
It was a Sunday morning when the gratitude program was planned. We had requested Swami to come inside the bhajan hall to share an audience with all the postgraduate students. Swami had consented for that, and once there were two parts in our program. The first part was still a song where the song goes, O Nestama Priyamaina Bandhama Prema Kurupama Maandari Pranama. After that, the line ends with, the song ends with, Matalaidava, Matalaidava. It means, O friend, O dear one, please talk to us.
Okay.
These were the words which were there in those, which was there in that song. And Swami was very happy, and we didn't expect that Swami would react immediately to this song. And he started speaking.
Oh, so nice. Instant response.
Instant response. Usually when a gratitude program happens, it goes on only for a session. So in the first part of this particular program, my dance was planned. And our former Vice Chancellor Sir, Sri S.V. Giri Sir, was sitting beside Swami. Long time since I danced. As soon as I got up for the dance, Swami pointed out to me, and he was referring to me, and he called out to Vice Chancellor Sir. He told, there is my dancer. He is dancing so well. Just see, watch him. And that filled a lot of joy in my heart, and that gave me the energy to start the dance. And it was such a beautiful experience. And the twist to the entire program was, as my part was over in the morning, the afternoon session, Swami had told the second part to be continued in the evening. This was a surprise for the entire class. So I was sitting in the 10th row of the students' block. As the entire block was filled by the second PG students, we were 140 of us. And then, after the second part of the program was over, Swami called to one of our coordinators and he asked, where is the boy who danced in the morning? And they indicated to me, and I came from behind. I was not prepared at all for this.
And I guess you were wearing whites and whites?
I was wearing whites.
Hmm.
So then Swami told, you danced in the morning so well, will you dance for the same poem now?
Oh, nice.
And it was a real shock for me as well as the person who rendered the poem for me. A person, my classmate was rendering the poem as I was
dancing,
depicting it.
Okay.
So he forgot to get the book. And for depicting any particular thematic, you need to by heart the entire lyrics. So I had all the wordings in my mind because I had choreographed this. So the boy got stuck up. He forgot one or two lines. And then Swami looked at that boy and told, you stop. And he pointed towards me. I was halfway through the theme. He told, you sing and you dance. And then I started lipping out the entire poem, and then I continued with the thematic.
Were you not breathless?
No, Swami gives the energy when he tells us to do something.
So you were saying your own words and dancing to them?
Yes. It was not quite so loud, only Swami could hear it.
Good enough.
And the icing on the cake was, after the entire thing, he called me and he materialized Vibhuti for me and he gave it to me.
Oh, Ganesh.
And there is one more twist to this.
Tell us.
That being the time of Shivratri, all the Vrindavan boys had come from Vrindavan to have Swami's darshan to celebrate Shivratri. And Swami came before the boys entered the Kulwant hall. Swami was waiting for all the Vrindavan boys to come.
Mm-hmm.
He summoned the second PG boys to put up the same gratitude program again.
Oh, so third time. Oh.
And then it was a bonanza for us.
Now you were wearing your costume and everything.
No, I was not.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't expect this dance to happen. It was only the songs and the speeches were supposed to. So then suddenly Swami pointed towards me halfway through the program. You stand up and dance for this. And then that was a third continuous time which I danced for this particular thematic.
That's how much he likes this poem, huh? And yes. Your dance.
Yes, it's really the essence of what our love for Swami and what Swami is for us.
Mm. Wow, thank you Ganesh for sharing that with all the listeners of Morning Glory. And dear listeners, I also want you to know that I had the good, great fortune of sitting across from Brother Ganesh and recording an amazing Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with him several weeks ago, actually several months ago. But you know, because we have so many interviews in the pipeline and it'll come up for editing eventually someday, hopefully in the year 2014, and you will hear it soon. And it's full of such wonderful experiences. Each one is so phenomenal, and when I see the way Brother Ganesh conducts himself and the way he works and the perpetual smile on his face, he never says no if you ask him to go out of his way to do anything, then you know how Swami has trained, chiseled and nurtured each of his instruments. For me, it's such an honor to work with my colleagues, my little brothers here, who are each one of whom is an inspiration and a role model, and one of them really is Brother Ganesh. So I'd urge you to, whenever of course you'll hear, we will debut that Fleeting Moments interview with Ganesh on Morning Glory whenever it comes up, in its turn comes up for airing. But I assure you that you will love every word of it. It's full of such experiences. It's full of so many impromptu interactions with Swami. And when he was speaking to me, my heart was just bursting with joy, and I had tears of happiness in my eyes, but I just had to stay calm because I was the interviewer. But the innocence, the purity of the relationship of Swami with his students is so touching. And I urge you to make sure you stay tuned to that Fleeting Moments episode, which I hope to bring you soon. Now, with all this background in mind, dear brothers and sisters, what did this reflection, this poem, mean to you? Come on, tell us what's on your mind, and we always welcome your feedback. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. It is now time for part two of a three-part Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Mr. Yesab Giri of Darjeeling. Brother Yesab Giri is an alumnus of Bhagwan Baba's University, and here he's in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Brother Bishop Rushdie. Over now to part two of this three-part interview.
It's amazing, and I remember that day there was a bhajan, Patishwari Jagajanmi. Someone was singing this bhajan. I was outside in the portico, and I could see Swami. From where I was sitting, I could see his face. And I think there is a line which comes, Karuna Sadani, Karuna Mahima.
Yes.
When the bhajan started, my mind went to that line. Even before the singer sang that line, my mind went to the line, and I thought, how apt that line is today for me. Yeah?
Because he just being so compassionate.
Compassionate mercy. So I thought, how beautiful this line is for the whole situation that I've been today, you know. And just when the singer sang that line, Swami was looking straight. He just turned around, looked at me outside in the portico, just met my eyes for that line and turned around.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm sort of indebted. My case would be something like indebted, you know, forever indebted.
Yes. And I think sitting in the bhajan group and having a chance to sing and connect to Swami through music, that is really one of the greatest privileges that you can have as a student.
No doubt. In fact, I never considered myself to be a good, great singer. You gave a great introduction, but no. I just sing, and many times I have sung out of scale. But in my heart, I always wanted to sing for Swami. So, you know, 2 years sitting in front in the first row in the Bhajan Mandir, looking up at him and singing for him, there was no greater joy. Whether I was singing out of scale or out of tune didn't really matter. If I got an opportunity to sing, he was sitting there and listening to my bhajan, I think that was all that mattered.
And were there moments when Swami guided you about singing or gave certain specific instructions about how possibly you could render a bhajan or how you should prepare for bhajan singing, or what is it that you should be keeping in mind when you sing for the Lord?
Not really. But once a while, I think, when our throats had gone dry and we could not sing, I remember me and Pai, we had some challenges in the Parthi time, so Swami did come across and suggest that, okay, you know, you have this, or gargle, or have this medicine, or do that. You know, there was a very interesting episode of the playfulness of Swami. This is in Kodai.
Mm-hmm.
There was this New Year festival coming up, I guess, in
Tamil New Year.
Tamil New Year. In April.
Because that is the time Swami generally goes to Kodai.
Correct. So there has to be a musical program, because there was a music group in that team. So Ajmish, I was there, Pai was there, Prasenjit was there. So he said, yes, Swami, we will prepare and we will present you a music program. And I think we went overboard in our planning, and we decided that we will sing different languages and surprise Swami. So I decided I will sing Tamil, and Pai and Ajmish, I think, was Kannada and Telugu. So all three of us, we don't know, but three different languages
that each one of you is not familiar with.
I know. And we really burned the midnight oil trying to learn the words, the proper way to pronounce those words. And the day came, and then Swami made a promise. He said, okay, you guys give a program, and if everyone, the crowd and I like the program, I will give you something special.
Swami said that.
Okay. And we also prepared. Unfortunately, that day, while I think our songs were okay, decent songs, but our mic system failed, sort of, you know. So the output was quite bad. The mics were not working properly, and it didn't come out that great. So when we went back, Swami said, how's the program? So no one wanted to give a great response in great, Swami. Yeah, it was not great. You know, I think the mic system also failed. So overall, people also did not really enjoy it and all.
Swami said that.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking of doing something for you guys, but you know, how can I justify? He said that. So we were very crestfallen that, you know, okay, fine, something you will give. Always, you know, Swami wants to give something, that anticipation is there, you know, we want something from Swami, but also that we could not make him happy, you know. Yeah. We were a little, and that too, having given an effort to learn new languages. So fine, we were sad. We took it to heart. One of my Pai, I think it was, took it a little step further, and he was very upset. And he stopped eating.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he stopped eating. Then the next day also he didn't eat. Then
all the sessions.
Yeah, that night he didn't eat. Dinner, morning, breakfast also, Pai is not eating. So Swami came to know them. Swami said, Pai, what is it? So Swami, I'm very unhappy that, you know, very sad that, you know, you didn't like it and all that. So Swami tried pacifying Pai, but Pai was not getting pacified. Finally Swami said, fine, okay, I will give you one more chance. He put one more music program. And if you guys do well, okay, I will do something for you guys.
So creating opportunity. Look at the Lord. He wants to give.
Yes.
And he is creating an opportunity.
And we are upset.
Okay.
Just the other way around. So then this time we said, okay, and let's not play around with different languages. Simple Hindi, where we have our strengths. And mics also we will only monitor. So we gave a program. And supposing it came out decent, good. We came back to the bungalow. Swami asked the VIPs and all that, how was the program? So Swami, it was very good and all that. So expectant, we were looking at him. He waved his hand, and you know, believe, from one wave, he brought out three items. Okay. One ring for me. One bracelet for Ajnish. Okay. If I am not wrong, one locket for Pai.
Oh, three different items with this one gust of air that he clutched.
Yes.
Wow. Fantastic. And what a reward, you know. He wants to give it to you, and he give you another opportunity so that he can just reward you. That is really classic Swami.
Nothing can describe it better. It's like a mother wants to just keep on ensuring that the children are happy and contented. He wants to give and give and give, you know.
And never expect actually anything in return.
Nothing.
Even if you don't ever give back anything, that's what you have seen of Bhagwan, you know.
Yeah.
He would never complain. Because when he gave it, he was just giving it for the sake of giving it. And talking about Kodaikanal, what are the other beautiful moments? This was 1993
in Kodaikanal.
Yes. And I think Swami spent so much time. How many days you were there with Swami in Kodaikanal?
So about a month?
About a month. A month. And Kodaikanal, you're like literally staying with Swami in his house from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yes, I'll tell you, when we came out of Kodaikanal after 30 days, so we were not in touch with the world outside, we had not seen news, we had not read newspapers, we were completely cut off, completely in a different world. Our mental situation, our mental thoughts were completely different. Swami has that effect. This morning you had a session with Swami, you were with Swami for breakfast, you saw Swami for lunch, you have another session with Swami, you go out with Swami, you have bhajans with Swami, another session with Swami, then you go to bed, you know. In fact, we were sleeping on the same floor as Swami.
Yes.
And I used to sleep on Swami's door.
Next to the door.
Yeah. Then you couldn't say that I got an opportunity to sleep. I used to sleep at the door.
Wow.
In fact, one day, I'm not very sure about
the timings of this episode, but I can tell you the context that one day he got up around 2 o'clock and we used to wait for him just outside the door. He got up and his eyes were blood red.
Two in the afternoon
he used to come out, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon he used to come out and spend some time with us and then go out for darshan.
Yes.
So he came out and eyes were red.
Mm-hmm.
Then he had a sofa. He just came out of the door, there was a sofa where he used to sit with the boys for 5-10 minutes and then he used to go downstairs, where was the main area. Then he said, "Boys, I have fever," he said, you know, and as usual he said, "Family, then I think you should take rest and all that." Then he told someone, "Get thermometer." You know, saying, "Put your thermometer in your mouth and ask someone who can check the time." In fact, you know, I took a photograph also of that. I was just below and I took a photograph of him with the thermometer in his mouth. So he almost slapped me saying, "What are you doing?"
Taking a picture.
It's a serious moment. You are taking a photograph of him with thermometer.
Mm.
And then it was some 100 degrees. I think it has gone over 100 degrees, if I remember it right. Then we all pleaded, "Swami, there is no need for you to go out. You please take rest." And he said, "No. The devil is outside. I've come from a very far off place. They don't know that I'm unwell. They're coming to see me. If I don't go out, those thousands of devotees will go back disappointed. I can't do that. So I will go."
Mm-hmm.
So he went out, gave darshan, came back. And it was, I think, dinner time. And we realized that he was actually sweating. His robe was wet. First someone thought that maybe something has spilled over. Then we realized, no, it is sweating. So we told Swami, "You're sweating." Then even his face was full of sweat. He was just trying to dab it with a towel. And I don't think he even had food. He just retired for the night. In the morning he came out. He was not well. He still had fever. So morning boys caught him. He said, "No, Swami, today we will not allow you to go. You will not go out. You will take rest." And for a while he said, "Are you sure?" "Yes, we will not allow you to go. You have to get rest. You have to be okay. You want me to be okay?" "Yes." "Okay. Pray for me." And he said, to all of us sitting around, he said, "Pray for me." Now, we closed our eyes, but we didn't know whom to pray to. You're sitting in front of God. Now, whom do you pray to? To make God okay, you know. So, we were a little confused. Whom do you pray to? Nevertheless, we closed our eyes. Okay, we had to pray. Then his eyes were red. His only temperature was 101, I guess. That is, okay, 2 minutes you pray. 2 minutes you prayed. So someone got the thermometer. Okay? In the 2 minutes, and the time the guy is getting the thermometer, we are seeing that he is coming back to normal. His face color is changing. His eyes are also changing.
Yes,
he is getting normal. And by the time he has put the thermometer in his mouth, it is normal. He said, "You guys prayed and I'm okay now." But the story is that there was a devotee of his, a very old devotee of his, a lady, who was undergoing a surgery in Chennai, if I'm not wrong. And during that surgery, her blood pressure fell.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell precariously and, you know, she would have slipped into coma. So to save her, Swami took upon that illness for almost half a day so that she would recover.
Someone revealed this later.
Yeah, next day there was a gentleman there, I don't know his name, he came over and said that, "Swami, the operation is successful now, she's okay, doctors are saying she's out of danger."
Wow. And also Swami was perhaps giving you this lesson here that if you pray, anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Not only that, he was sitting in Kodaikanal with a group of students, he was able to understand the plight of a devotee somewhere who is probably crying for help. To Swami, he has time with us, he has time there, is able to take that illness, suffer himself, get someone okay. This is a lot of learning for us as students, no?
Yes. And his body was always for others.
Always for others, yes.
And even in the last moments, the only thing you could do was pray. And that is the only thing, because I used to remember, the last few days when he was physically not so well, but he used to take that extreme trouble to come out and give darshan.
True.
And I think it was only these prayers of devotees, which was propelling him so much.
Yes.
To, in spite of his physical condition being so precarious, to come out and give darshan. And that is God's weakness, our prayers.
Yes, I will agree with you completely, because he came to Delhi, and year before he took samadhi.
Yeah. 2010 he was in Delhi.
2010 he was in Delhi. And that was, I think, his longest trip in north. He came to Delhi, went to Shimla.
Yes.
Came back to Delhi. It was a very long trip. And
about 10 days.
Yeah. And he was not well in that sense, you know. He was not well.
None of us knew that it was actually the penultimate year.
Yeah.
I mean, in a few months.
And you will believe that he came to Delhi in peak summer. That was, I think, May, April, May he came, wherein even the tar on the road melts. You know, it is that hot in Delhi. And in that heat, he used to travel across to Dwarka from the Sai Center, which is quite far a distance, in the evening and give darshan to crowds there. And he went and visited almost each and every of his old devotees in their houses.
So many houses he visited.
Yes. He gave a lot of happiness to people when he came to Delhi. Despite the physical pain that he had, you know.
He just giving himself away completely.
Yes.
Okay, I really wanted to go back to Kodaikanal because I think 30 days with Swami and there must have been many more beautiful, cherishable moments.
Yes, there was one, in fact I have a photograph, there was one instance wherein Swami was explaining, I think, the level to which God goes to take care of his devotees, to support his devotees. So he somehow brought this context of Mahabharata and Arjuna and Krishna. So he explained to us that in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, while the war was going on, there was so much of noise that the archer, that was Arjuna, could not really communicate with Krishna, who was the charioteer, as to where to go, how to take the chariot, left, right, forward, you know. So he says that where Krishna sat on the chariot, just where his temple was, you know, from there Arjuna's level started.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So basically where Arjuna's feet were, that is where...
Near his temple. Yes. And Arjuna's shoes probably had a small pointed thing on the inner part of his shoes that he wore, which was connected to the temple of Krishna. And when he wanted Krishna to move right, he would actually poke his temple so that Krishna knew that Arjuna wanted me to go right and left. Swami said that this is the way the chariot was driven. That he had to poke Krishna every time he wanted to go right or poke him when he wanted to go left. And then he suddenly saw me and said, you come here, I will show it. So he said, you bend your head. So I bent my head and Swami put his leg to my temple, his toe to my temple, and he said, okay, this is the way he was pressing when he wanted to go left and this is the way he was pressing when he wanted to go right. And someone has actually taken a photograph of that.
To the extent that God subjects himself for the sake of his devotee.
Yes.
And now, I mean, only Swami can explain all these things.
Yes.
And of course you had that blessing that, you know, now that same Sai Krishna, now of course he touched your head. I think that is really...
There was one more. I was, you know, the way, you know, we use this word ma, no? Mother. One of our colleagues didn't have a very good stomach. So he started having indigestion and became quite bad and he couldn't really eat. So I think he was skipping some meals. He was not keeping well. Swami came to know about that. So he inquired, what's wrong? So Swami, it's okay. You want to tell him? No, tell me what is wrong. Why are you not eating your food? So I have some indigestion, so I'm not able to eat, so I'm taking something very light. But he had taken light for, I think, 2-3 meals. Swami didn't like that. So hold on. He went to the kitchen. He got some utensils, poured some mixtures, water, something, whatever he made. He made one sort of juice like
Swami himself.
Yes, himself. Brought it along. Gave it himself. Yes, himself made, brought it along to our brother and gave, you drink this, you'll be okay.
Oh my God. You have seen this?
Yeah, we've seen that.
It really reminds me of Swami's childhood. When Swami used to make that rasam, Swami used to at times narrate that instance when he used to spend time with his grandfather, Kundamaraju, and when Kundamaraju said that I don't want any property of the family, all I want is Satya to stay with me, and Swami used to say that how he used to cook for himself and for Kundamaraju, and the whole village used to come just to drink Swami's rasam, the rasam that Swami used to prepare.
Okay.
And here Bhagwan made rasam for...
Yes, he made a mixture for him.
Wow.
And which made him okay, you know.
Wow.
Made him okay. So, we were shocked to see the whole scene, because in Kodai, it's one bungalow you're living, and before Kodai, you know, we've seen Swami, we know he's God, and we've seen him in all his regalia, and you know, we cannot fathom that he can come to a level wherein, you know, he will now, you know, do the mundane things and prepare a juice for you and, you know, come to every table and say, okay, why you're not eating idli and why you're not eating sambar and, you know, call the servers and say, you put sambar here and give him some rice and give him some papad, you know. You don't expect that. So, first of all, it was very awkward and little, and we were shocked and said, come on, what's happening here? Swami is treating us, yes. Really, it was very difficult to fathom
What does that mean?
Actually speaking,
he's breaking all mental impressions and barriers that he had.
But when you peel off all those layers, you see that the care that he had, you know, the concern that he had, that I have taken these people to stay with me for 30 days. They are under my care. I will take care of them, you know.
And he showed how he should take care.
Yes, yes.
And I think in Kode also is, as I say, the divine playground. And perhaps you also might have had many occasions when somebody materialized many things, which he generally doesn't do in other places.
Yeah, I would say that the three things that he did at one go was, one, he did materialize a lot of things. It's been some time, memory fades. I'm not really able to recollect much of those, but this comes very vividly to mind because there was a lot of episode behind these three things that he materialized in Kode.
So 30 days in Kode and you're back to Prashanti.
Yes.
To continue your MBA.
Yeah, I came to do my MBA.
Yeah. And after your management, how was it leaving the portals?
Initially, I didn't want to leave. So I stayed back for a month. And I told Swami that, give me some work here. I don't want to go. But he was very adamant, saying, nothing doing, you will go. You have no role to play here. And in that sense, I have nothing for you here, you have to go. So I really didn't want to go, frankly speaking. I didn't want to go. And then I came to know that, you know, there was a Swami's devotee who was looking at hiring some students, and someone said, why don't you give it a shot? You can meet him and understand. So I went and met him, and then found him to be Swami's devotee, and he wanted to hire Sai students. So somehow something clicked. I said, okay, you know, why don't I give it a shot here? And then I came back, and Swami said, you have to go. Have you got a job and all that? So I said, yes, Swami, I've got a job. Who is giving you the job? I said, the gentleman. Okay, he's giving me a job. Okay. So he said, good. When are you going? One day he came and asked me, when are you leaving? Okay. Or I would say, when are you going, probably was the word he used. There is a story behind this, which I'll probably tell you later.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him some date, a week, 10 days from now. He said, I want to meet you before you go. So he called me, along with a group of Russians.
Mm-hmm.
He called me, and I was at the back. He was chatting with them, and after a while, he took them for a personal interview. He got them back. And then he materialized this Navratna ring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he showed it to people and all that, and he said, do you know what it is and all that? Then he saw me at the end. Said, you come here. Said, do you know what it is? I said, I know, Swami, it's Navratna.
Nine gems.
Yes. But in my heart, I was telling him, please don't give it to me. You know, I had a ring with him. And you know, back of my consciousness, that Navratna thing was meant for VIPs. So I said, don't make me anything like that. So I don't want this ring. In my mind, I don't want this ring. I'm very happy with what you're giving me. I don't want anything. He looked at me and he looked at the Russian and he says, this person does not want this ring. He doesn't want the ring.
Oh my God.
Okay. So we will not give him this ring. He just blew it out of the air.
Okay. Oh, he just blew it.
Yeah, he blew it out and he continued with the talk and all that. Then he looked at me and said, okay, you want Navratna ring or you want Sai Baba ring? He asked me. So I said, what do I say? Both are, I said, Swami, both are yours. No, no, you choose. You want Navratna's ring, you want Sai Baba ring. I can't make a choice. It's both is his. So Swami, it's your wish. Both are yours. Then finally we created the ring with his face embossed.
Oh, what you're wearing now?
Yes.
Golden Swami.
Yeah, and gave it.
Wow.
And he said, you hold on. I had gone out, I think I was sitting at the mandir, just near his chair, just near the door. Looking into the interview room, I was sitting there, if I remember it right. And then he comes out and gives me an envelope and he says, here is money. This is for your travel to Indore.
Wow.
I couldn't even utter and say thank you. I was, you know, shell-shocked. Who can go to that extent, you know? Get you a job, call you for an interview, give you words of advice. Then he'll give you a fare also and say, you know, take this money.
Farewell, along with fare.
Yes, but you know, when I consider these two questions that he asked me, you know, beginning of my first day at the Vrindavan campus, he asked me, where are you coming from? And almost at my last day, he asked me, when are you going? What I consider him asking me, where are you going? So between where are you coming from and where are you going, probably is the journey that we all are in.
Yes.
Never realizing where are we coming from and where are we going, you know. We've always in the physical world, so when you say, where are you coming from, I am going to say Darjeeling, and where are you going, I'm going to say Indore. But I don't think that's what he wanted us to do.
More and more when you reflect on the time you spent, these things keep coming back to you, right?
Correct.
These words keep making new meanings, because I think every second that he spent with anyone, I think
it was an investment of the divine.
Yes, there is a purpose behind it.
And there is a purpose behind it.
Till this date, I don't know what the purpose is. So much of time and effort he gave to me, I don't know the purpose behind it. I'm still struggling to find the purpose. Even when he came to Delhi, he asked me, what sort of service are you doing, you know?
What service are you doing?
What service are you doing? So, while I told him what my current profession is, but I don't think that was the answer that he was looking at. You know, surprisingly, every time I came to Padthi, I came after long gaps. I came in 95, 96. I came after a gap of 6 years in 2002, when the first alumni meet was there.
Mm-hmm.
The first, when we gave that program, it was stitched together and we gave a program. I sang one bhajan, and me and Azmi sang one kavali also. It is okay, inside the mandir we gave, you know, lot of echo and all that, but Swami liked it so much that he presented us with watches. And while giving the watch, he looked at me and recognized me and said, after 6 years I was coming back and he said, Indore, are you still in Indore?
He remembered.
Yes.
And he seemed like how many students, batches of students.
Yes, Indore, he asked me. I said, no Swami, now I'm in Delhi. The next time I came, I think I came after 4 years. And then I stayed back one more day and Swami gave us this audience inside the mandir. Yes, he was on a wheelchair then. And he passed by me. In fact, my wife had given me a letter. Okay. I was trying to give this letter to him, but he was ignoring me. I somehow couldn't find my way. This time I felt, no, I have to give him this letter. So when I got up to give this letter, he looked at me and said, Delhi? I said, yes, Swami.
Oh my God.
Then he said, children. Then I had one daughter. I said, Swami, I have a daughter. I said, okay. So every year I came, even if after 4 or 5 gaps, he was always there to say, I know you.
I know you.
I'm keeping track of you, I know you.
Oh my God, that's phenomenal. And Swami, with how many students used to interact?
Yes, yes.
Batches after batches of students every year. And to really think, I think even your closest friends will not, after 4 years, they will not remember where you are working, what were you doing.
Yes, and I never expected me to be recognized. I never came to Padthi saying that he would recognize me, no. It was always a shock that he would recognize and speak. Even when he came to Delhi, you know, he was almost paralytic, his speech was slurring, I don't know how his vision was in the physical form, you know. He saw me at a distance of 10 feet, called me and said, what job are you doing? When I said, I'm in service, what sort of service are you doing? In Telugu, he was asking me, yes. A colleague of mine was interpreting it. And then finally when I said, you know, I'm in a profession wherein I provide jobs to people, then he looked at me and he said, okay, you take Bad Namaskar. I had least expected me to be recognized after such a long gap.
I think the only two words to describe Swami, I think to some extent where you can do justice to what Swami is unconditional love.
Yes, yes.
Absolute, selfless, unconditional love. I think that is something which every student has experienced.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is the 13th of February 2014, and the time in Prashanthi Nilayam right now is 11 a.m. You just heard the second part of a three-part conversation with Mr. Yesab Giri, an alumnus of the Sai University. He was in conversation with my colleague, Brother Bishu Prushti. The final part of this three-part interview will be aired right here on Morning Glory next week, same place, same time. By the way, this interview was recorded on December the 30th, 2013, and Radio Sai's Prem Manoush and Abhishek Acharya were the audio engineers responsible for this production. Please do share your feedback about this program by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. It is now time for me to wind up Morning Glory, and I would like to take this moment and offer my hosting efforts at Bhagwan's lotus feet. What an honor it is to be a pencil in his hands. And before I bid you Sai Ram for the day, may I remind you that you can access hundreds of very moving, insightful and engaging conversations with Baba's former students under our Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memory series at radiosai.org/Sai Students. This shortcut, namely radiosai.org/Sai Students, is all you need to access hundreds of conversations, each one a unique story of the Divine Teacher's personal relationship with each and every single student of his. And just so you know, in this shortcut, radiosci.org/sci-students, the last part, sci-students, is one word ending with an S. It's plural. May I also add that while fleeting moments lasting memories is about student experiences, our Tris with Divinity series, consisting of conversations with seekers around the world whose lives have been touched and transformed by Bhagwan Baba, can also be accessed at the following shortcut, radiosci.org/Trist. I repeat the location for accessing our Tris with Divinity interviews with Sai devotees from all over the world, radiosci.org/Trist. That is T-R-Y-S-T. Quite simple, isn't it? And my colleague, Brother Prem, has just reminded me something very important. Today happens to be World Radio Day. So to all our listeners out there, a very happy and holy World Radio Day from the team at Radio Sci in Prashanthi Nilayam. We love radio. We do radio all the time here with a little bit of video component. And the way we stay connected and bring Baba's devotees straight, connect their hearts to the cosmic energy of Prashanthi Nilayam is through Radio Sci. So here's wishing everybody who listens to radio more power to you, brother and sister out there. Today we celebrate Radio Day with lots of Swami's love for you, and we hope we'll use this medium effectively to disseminate Baba's message of love and universal harmony. Meanwhile, till we meet next Thursday, dear sisters and brothers, I ask you to please be well, keep seeking, and do whatever it takes to stay inspired and focused on the positive. Jai Sai Ram.